someone might win this apocalyptic fight. At the expense of all life here, Israel will disappear. If that's the goal, they'll keep on going, reap the firestorm they're sowing. But if this country would survive, reverse course and stay.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Colombians voted over the weekend, and though the first ballot didn't produce a clear presidential winner, it did reveal a plethora of irregularities and interference in the country's free and fair exercise of popular democracy. What that means for the next round, due June 21st, is of extreme concern, not only for Colombia's future political stability, but too for its neighbors and all of South America. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan's represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's death squads. He served as a foreign observer to elections there and acts currently as Colombian President Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States. His book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care. And his latest, co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov, is Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, it's always great to speak with you. Of course, there are serious questions about the validity of the results of that first round, as mentioned. But unlike, Dan, past elections, the incumbent government are on the left, the victims of this hanky-panky. What can President Petro do to address this apparent and inherent fraud in the Colombian voting system?
Well, I think probably what is done in terms of the first round. But I hope that he can at least be able to prove that there was fraud in the first round, which would be very, I think, impactful to the next round in terms of how people might vote. But also maybe get the bugs out for the second round. Now, what happened, what he claims happened, is that so there's a private company that's overseeing the election process. Petro claims that in the week before the election, they produced like 800,000 more ballots than should have been produced, and that somehow those ballots were marked, and that probably produced the result that we saw, in which his successor, Ivan Cepeda, came in second by a narrow margin, by 3%. So hopefully, you know, if he can prove that's true, hopefully he could at least make sure that the runoff election on June 21st is free and fair.
Well, he does claim that. He says that the source code for this, and this again gets back to this whole electronic voting, why this is used anywhere is a mystery to me. But he says the source code, the registrar has refused to make public. There's no transparency. He says that he has proof it was modified, that they got the metadata on it, that the voter rules were modified not once but twice in the electoral period, which it's supposed to be a sacrosanct. It's not supposed to be able to be manipulated in that way. And he also points a finger at the guys who run the software company, these so-called Bautista brothers. Are these the same Bautista, the Miami Bautistas, the bankrollers of Marco Rubio's entire political career?
Yes, yes, indeed. And we also know that Rubio's very, oppositional towards Petro. Well, and Trump just endorsed the right-wing candidate for president yesterday.
So I guess what I'm saying with my question, Dan, is as president, what authority does Petro have, or does he have any?
He has none. He has no authority to change the situation. it's up to this panel of judges who oversees the elections for him to convince them to change things.
The last time we spoke, you know, you talked about Petro as being akin to a rock star in Colombia. Cepeda is Ivan Cepeda is his protege, is his choice for to take over for him. The numbers, even with all of this alleged manipulation in the system, were very close. I mean, in Colombia, you need 50% plus one to go through. And it was, I can't remember the numbers exactly. I think it was like 43-42, roughly, percentage split between the two leading candidates.
Yeah, I think it was something like 43-40%.
Oh, that far.
And that was in a race of six candidates. And so now it'll be down to two for the second round. So Cepeda still has a chance to win, but it doesn't look great because the person who came in third during the first round and got a significant amount of votes is also right-wing and will probably, you know, encourage her voters to vote for the right-wing candidate. So, you know, it's looking very tough at this point.
And do we see the same kind of division between the city dwelling or urbanites and the those out in the countryside?
Well, yeah, but it's the opposite of what we see in the U.S., right, where the rural voters tend to be more conservative. Here they tend to be more left-wing, you know. So, yeah, in the rural areas, Petro did better. I'm sorry, Cepeda did better. Cepeda does better amongst the poor, whether rural or urban, amongst indigenous people, Afro descendants. He did not as good as hoped for with the lower middle class, who went in strong numbers for the right-wing candidate.
Yeah, and yeah, you mentioned El País has a piece in yesterday's paper. Or today, sorry, Trump expresses total endorsement of Colombia's far-right presidential candidate, Abelardo de la Espriella, or Espriella. Who is Abelardo?
Well, he is an ultra-right winger. He's someone who supports an iron hand in the country. He will certainly support more military operations against the population, including paramilitary operations, which he supported in the past, and will most likely eliminate the social programs that the current president, Gustavo Petro, put in place. So it really will be a return to the bad old days if he wins.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of him in that País piece, and I thought he was Nayib Bukele. He looks like, is there a factory, you know, pumping these guys out? I mean, his politics will be exactly the same as well.
Yeah, I've heard others note that these types of candidates are starting to look all alike. It is very strange.
It's a cloning factory, and he calls himself El Tigre. And he's the picture I've got of him, he's got a baseball cap with a picture of a Bengal tiger on the front. It's going around Twitter, though, a video clip of him, I'm not sure how old it is, but speaking on some kind of chat show in Colombia, laughing and joking about how as a young man he used to torture cats and tie fireworks to them to watch them explode. It's funny that he would choose a tiger as his avatar.
Well, it's an aggressive It's an aggressive move, of course. And, of course, he's also shown on social media after he got the endorsement for Trump. He sent a very effusive, praise to Trump. And he had a picture of an eagle, of course, representing the U.S., and a tiger marching together. You know, I think it says a lot about his politics and, you know, that it's going to be a very aggressive form of politics and a very aggressive form of leadership, again, that's going to focus a lot on military and police action.
Well, just not a great place to be a cat, I suppose. Camila Lourdes-Gayarza, I'm sorry about that, Camila, in an article that she posted, it's talks about a return to Plan Colombia. This is what Abelardo represents. He's already talked, and maybe you could tell us, remind us what Plan Colombia is, but he's talked about reinstating the fumigar or the fumigation project against coca plantations in the countryside, and of course strengthening alliances again with Israel, something that Petro had cut off.
Yes, so under Plan Colombia, which was a $10 billion military aid package to Colombia, there was a focus on aerial spraying of very poisonous defoliants, which were very destructive to the soil, to legitimate crops, because they, you know, they were sprayed from very high above, weren't always very accurate. You know, there were photos side by side of, you know, of you know, coca crops, coca being the raw material for cocaine, coca crops being left unmolested next to, you know, legitimate crops and farm animals killed by this spraying. But also under Plan Colombia, there was a very brutal crackdown on the social movements, on union leaders and indigenous leaders, on peasant leaders. So really, and hundreds of thousands were killed during that period. So there's a real concern, you know, if he goes that route, if he chooses to return to those days.
Well, and Camilla's article, it's called Leaked Audio Reveals U.S. Embassy Plot to Frame Colombia's Left-Wing Government in Drug Trafficking Case. Where have we heard that before? I'm curious, Dan, if you followed the HondurasGate.ch revelations on what the goings-on in Honduras and the conspiracy of the ex-president there, Hernandez, to what looks like create, like Plan Colombia was also a coordinated effort between countries and focused on left-wing opposition groups, much like the Operation Condor of the 70s and 80s. And it looks like, according to these leaks in Honduras Gate, that this is what they're trying to do, is reinstate a new Operation Condor. Have you followed this?
Yeah, well, in this case, it was they created a slush fund to essentially create propaganda to that would undermine left-wing candidates and promote right-wing candidates. And as you said, one of the people, key persons in this is the former Honduran president who was in jail in the U.S. For drug trafficking. And Trump pardoned him, showing how little he actually cares about fighting drugs.
But not only did he pardon him, and this is like 400 tons of cocaine that they knew about that he was convicted of importing into the United States or being a part of the conspiracy. Hernandez also, in these leaks, he admitted that they were planning to assassinate, if necessary, left-wing political opponents inside Honduras. It was more than just a propaganda plan. And it went beyond the borders, using Honduras, by the sounds of it, as a central hub of the destabilization of democracies all throughout Latin America.
Yes, and another hub is Ecuador, which is on the border of Colombia. And the U.S. has ground troops there, working side by side with the Ecuadorian military, which is now under really a dictatorship in Ecuador, where a major opposition party was outlawed. And there was this incident, which I think is very emblematic of what's happening right now in Latin America, where a joint U.S.-Ecuadorian task force attacked a building, and the people inside, on the claim that they were drug traffickers, tortured the people. And then it turned out that these folks were simply innocent dairy farmers. So, yeah, I mean, we're kind of returning to the days of the right-wing dictatorships in Latin America, and not by accident, because there are forces, including in the United States, that are supporting that.
Yeah, and we see it. If you look at the news today, I mean, it's like in Chile, there's Honduras and Ecuador, as you mentioned, but Bolivia and Chile and even in Peru, it seems that it's a tinderbox right now that is just ready to go, ready to explode. The pink tide perhaps being next experienced as a pink tsunami of sorts.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a very dangerous time in the region. Of course, you had the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. He and his wife were, kidnapped by the U.S. and they were put in jail. And now Venezuela's made a number of concessions to the U.S. The similar treatment has been threatened against President Gustavo Petro. In Colombia, the U.S. supported a fraudulent election in Honduras, which brought back a right-wing government. So there is a certain march towards, the right in Latin America. But yeah, side by side with that, you do have major opposition, like in Bolivia, where there have been major strikes to take down the right-wing government there. And the U.S. is working with the Bolivian forces to destroy that strike. You now protest in Chile. There are protests now in Colombia in support of Ivan Cepeda, the left-wing candidate. So hopefully there will be a pushback against this move towards the right.
Yeah, and then there's the chainsaw maniac in Argentina. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dan Kowalik. Dan's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. He's represented unions whose membership was targeted in Colombia by the death squads there back in those terrible days. He served as a foreign observer to elections in that country and others. Currently, he is acting as Colombian outgoing president Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States. His book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters, and Why You Should Care. And his latest is co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. We were scheduled, Dan, you and I, to speak earlier today, but you had to postpone because you were speaking with your client, President Petro. What can you tell us about that conversation?
Well, he's very concerned about what's happening in Colombia. He does feel that, the election is in the process of being stolen. He's very concerned that Trump has kind of put his finger on the scale by openly supporting the right-wing candidate. In Petro's words, Trump intervened on the side of paramilitary fascism in Colombia. And, he's very worried that the country's going to return to the right and that the violence against the left will begin and all the social programs that Petro put in place will be destroyed and that also Colombia will start supporting Israel again. Colombia, up till very recently, provided over half of Israel's coal that it uses in its energy plants. So Colombia was very important in supporting Israel. Petro ended that. He outlawed the selling of coal to Israel, which was a very important move. But again, I think, it's very clear that if the right wins, they will reverse that policy. In fact, I've seen videos of rallies in support of the right-wing candidate. They have more Israeli flags than Colombian flags.
Well, and it's not just a one-way thing. Israel, for its part, before Petro, they were instrumental in arming the AUC, the paramilitary death squads that caused so much misery for so many years in Colombia.
Yes, well, that is true. In fact, the co-founder of the AUC paramilitary umbrella group, a guy named Carlos Castaño, he wrote a memoir in which he said that he owes his life, well, he's dead now, but he said at the time he owes his life and his country to Israel because they were so helpful to creating and arming the paramilitary death squads in Colombia.
Again, Camilla, she writes about intercepted communications between the Ecuadorian Interpol, between Colombian and Ecuadorian border. They're talking about framing and entrapping the Colombia's first left-wing head of state in history. Does Petro fear being kidnapped? I mean, I know there's everybody would fear that, but I mean, is there an imminent plan to kidnap him in the way that Maduro was?
Well, no, there isn't, though that was threatened at one time. But he is concerned if the right wing comes to power that he will be in danger, either of arrest or maybe even assassination. So really for him and others in his situation in the left-wing camp, the election really is a life or death one.
Well, and now, Dan, the last time we talked, we were talking in part at least about this continuing situation in Venezuela and in the Caribbean and on the Pacific side of these boats being blown up by the American military in Trump's version of the war on drugs. What Dan, is the legal position on this these continuing attacks on the maritime traffic in the Caribbean and Pacific?
Well, they're clearly illegal because they violate the most basic international and domestic rights to life and to due process. You know, you can't just say someone is a drug trafficker and murder them. This just flies in the face of everything we know about the right to trial and the right, the accompanying right to be treated as innocent before proven guilty, right? None of these people have been tried in a court of law. And as I always point out, even if they were found guilty in Texas, they wouldn't be put to death because drug trafficking is not a capital crime. So there's nothing legal about what's happening. If the U.S. believes someone is doing, drug trafficking, they should work with the countries involved to arrest those people and try them in a court and, punish them according to the law. This vigilante form of justice is just completely immoral and illegal.
Well, and De La Espriella, he says in a magazine interview, at least, he thanks America and Trump specifically, saying, quote, without him, none of this would be possible. It is essential to understand that the U.S. plays a decisive role in combating crime and narco-terrorism on trade issues as well. The U.S. is our primary partner. and then he declares that the Tiger era, the El Tigre era, he's not in office yet, but he's it looks like he's building an empire.
Yeah, and again, I mean, so what does that mean if he's going to work with Trump and carrying out Trump's, anti-drug policies? I mean, I think it does mean that they're going to engage in extrajudicial killings in Colombia of their own people, as happened during Plan Colombia. Remember, during Plan Colombia, there was this false positive scandal in which around 7,000, this is incredible, young men were murdered by the military, who would dress them up as guerrillas and claim they were guerrillas in order to keep the funding from the U.S. coming. And again, it was proven that these people were innocent. And in fact, the government would later admit that they had done this. And again, I think when you look at what Trump's doing, killing people on these boats, this right-wing candidate in Colombia is basically saying that he's going to, adopt those same policies which Colombia has engaged in before.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about that before, and these false positives and how much of a resemblance to, I think, I don't know if you observed or I did, but how familiar it was and how it seemed so much like the Phoenix program in the United States war against Vietnam, where they would, you know, plant guns on civilians that they killed just to get body counts, you know, and say, oh, they're all VC. This was a VC village, and everybody, they'd show pictures of them armed or in uniform.
Yeah, well, in terms of Vietnam, you know, essentially the rules of engagement were explicitly kill everyone that moves, everything that moves. Mm-hmm. And man, woman, and child, everyone was considered to be VC. And in fact, in the, you know, the folks who ran the helicopter guns, you know, again, their modus operandi was if someone ran from the helicopter, it meant they were VC, so they should be shot. And if they didn't run, they must be VC, so they would be shot. So, you know, yeah, that's exactly the type of body count mentality that we're seeing now with these boat bombings.
Well, if you want to listen to Dan and I talk about that, go to the gradio.substack.com and do a search for Dan Kovalik's name. And we've talked so many times over the years, Dan, but that was a few years ago, 2020, was it, that we talked about that, Dan? Do you remember?
I don't even remember. Yeah, it's several years of it.
Well, do you get the sense of deja vu there? I mean, this is all just more coming back to haunt?
Well, yes, of course. And, you know, the problem is if there aren't continued movements that, you know, keep a watch on the watchman, these things will happen, you know. And the fact that Trump's able to get away with what he's getting away with very little protests, very little opposition. Incredible. That's what allows it to happen, right? As Martin Luther King said, you know, evil prevails because good men do nothing. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
I've never seen a more evil moment in history, at least not in my time here. Dan, we're fast out of time, but finally, will you go down to be an observer for the June 21st poll?
Yeah, I am planning on doing that. That happens to be my birthday, so that's how I'll spend my birthday.
A happy birthday, and it's also the first day of summer, the day of St. John.
Indeed.
Well, Dan, thanks a lot for coming on again. I know how busy you are. I really appreciate it. And I want to thank Becca Steckel for coming on in the first half and remind people to check out the JPA. Well, that's all I got for this week. Till the next time.
Must we watch this movie again when we already know the plot? How one of the most horrible men rose to become a despot. Surrounded himself with worshippers, said he'd make us great. How he purged the unbelievers when he took hold of the state. How he made sure the press was filled with reporters who'd respect him. With key individuals killed, platformed, or imprisoned. And started a world war. Can we just fast forward to the part where his general says, sir, it's all over, and he shoots himself in the bunker. Must we witness the demolition of so many ancient places? Who believes in master classes for whom the rest of us must fight? The sacrificial masses out of mind and out of sight. Can we just fast forward?